Rebels. My name is Matthew Barton. Welcome to the Rebellion Brewing Podcast. Do you remember Bill Nye the Science Guy? Do you remember how much fun it was when your teacher rolled in the black TV cart into the room for science class? Today, you don't have to wait for a little black TV cart if you're looking for great science content. A whole new crop of creators are sharing their passion on social media. People like John and Hank Green, Emily Calandrelli, and Mark Rober are covering topics like astronomy, space, engineering, chemistry, biology, and more. Dana Green is a Saskatchewan-based wildlife biologist and a TikToker, and she's been steadily building a loyal, dedicated following, sharing her excitement about bats and mice, falcons, and more. And what's even more uncanny is her unexpected connection to our local craft beer scene. So let's get into it. Dana, welcome to the show.
Hi, nice to be here.
How's it going?
It's going very well. Just finally enjoying this nice weather that we're having here in Saskatchewan.
It's a good time, but I'm like used to the winter, so I'm like sweaty and heavy.
Hey, that can happen in winter too, with all the parkas and scarves and hats.
I guess let's start off by telling the audience, what the hell is it you do?
Well, that's a loaded question. So by training, I've been working towards getting pretty much every degree you can get in biology, and I am currently working on my PhD at the University of Regina. But I have training in wildlife biology, ecology, conservation biology, working with all sorts of different types of critters. And pretty much it all boils down to, I really love being outside and learning as much as I can about local wildlife and plants.
For someone who doesn't necessarily have 2 feet in the biology world, aka me, because nature is just basically trying to kill me.
There's a book titled that.
I didn't know. What does it mean? Like, are you in the field, like, picking up animal excrement? Or are you, like, capturing them and tagging them? Or what's kind of the work that you focus on?
I've had a lot of different opportunities to do all sorts of different type of work, and I like to dip my toe in a little bit of all of it. And so my answer is all of the above. Have I picked up a bunch of poop? Yes, I have. Have I captured wild animals and done different tagging, different types of tagging? Yes, I've done that too. And I've also done a lot of laboratory work. So doing kind of more chemistry-based type stuff, and also looking at brain waves. I've done those as well. So in the field, in the lab, in the classroom, I love it all.
One of the things that struck me was, I'm a big nerd, so when I'm on TikTok and I'm flipping through content, naturally I'm going to be seeing lots of science content. And then you came through my feed and I heard you say, oh, I'm doing work in Saskatchewan. And I was like, oh, I have to get her on the podcast to talk about her awesome work. Like, how often do you see a science TikToker from Saskatchewan? And you were the first. So I was like, I got to get her on the show. So I was thinking, why did you choose TikTok to share your passion?
So I really started, I would be lying if I said I wasn't a little apprehensive about TikTok, because it was a new form of social media. And I was like, man, I just figured out how to tweet. And because I've mostly been on Instagram, I love the visual aspect of being able to communicate my science. And Instagram has been a great mode for that up until TikTok came out. And then it's like you have up to 60 seconds to condense as much really awesome information and also be able to express vocally and with facial expressions how excited I actually am about this stuff. Because the work that I do gets me super jazzed up about the wildlife, but also the cool science, and being able to fully express that in that type of visual manner, TikTok is the way to go. You can do all sorts of different camera angles to keep it more engaging, and you can put pictures up if you want to, you know, like demonstrate, oh, this is a bat wing, if you want to show a bat wing. And you can also, it's like a, almost like a conversation, because you can respond to people's comments with videos. And it's almost like you're talking not only to your audience, but directly to your community. And the feedback that I've been getting, because I've been trying to engage as much as I can with the questions that I've been getting, and not even just about science, but about other things as well, and being able to directly connect with my followers. It's a really, really neat experience.
What, in terms of content, has got you really excited right now as pertains to your work?
So my TikTok has really started taking off lately, and I've just been getting all sorts of really great comments, mostly just people who want to know the basics about bats. Or if I say something random, like, oh, hey, this here mouse howls like a wolf, all of a sudden I'll get flooded with questions about, I'm sorry, what was that? A mouse that howls? Please explain more. And so it's just people really demonstrating their excitement about learning something new about wildlife, and me being able to just not get in necessarily to the nitty gritty of the science, but just being able to get excited enough about an organism, an animal, or a topic and share it. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun is really what it all boils down to. People get excited and I get excited.
I watched your TikToks, a few of them about the howler mice.
Yeah.
And it shows them throwing their heads back and kind of doing this chirp thing. What the hell is going on with that?
Yeah, so the mice that I am talking about there are called grasshopper mice, which the name, it was a piss poor name that they chose, in my humble opinion, because they are so much more gnarly than that. Oh, I see. You're already, I'm going to actually crack open one of these here Rebellion beers before I go. I need to quench my thirst before I go on. That's good. Oh man, that's good. That's the Kolsch.
That's right. You deserve a good beer for the podcast.
Thank you very much, sir. So grasshopper mice, they are called so because they had been seen to be eating a lot of grasshoppers. But the more and more researchers looked into it, they weren't just eating grasshoppers. They're eating all sorts of different arthropods, including scorpions. They are immune to scorpion venom, which is so cool. And they'll also be eating small reptiles, small snakes, and they're incredibly territorial. If you think about other carnivores, because that's what these mice are. They're carnivores. Other carnivores that are solitary, like these mice, have really large territories because they need a lot of prey. And they need to be able to indicate to all of the other carnivores in the area, this is my space, this is where I hunt. And so it is suspected, the actual very specific function of the howl is not fully understood, but the leading hypothesis as to why they do what they do is to vocalize to all of the other grasshopper mice in the area, this is mine, don't come here. So it's a territorial display.
So he's like, piss off, mouse.
Yeah. Yeah. And that it was a big part of my research. I wanted to know, you know, we knew that these mice were vocalizing in this way, and people can hear it. It's at about 10 kilohertz, and humans can hear up to 20 kilohertz. So we can hear it very clearly. And it sounds like a little high-pitched squeal in the middle. Like, just imagine being out on the prairies, because they do occur here. Being out in the prairies and all of a sudden just hearing little squee, squee. It's these tiny little grasshopper mice. if you made this mouse the size of a wolf, it would sound exactly like a wolf howl. And it's used for very similar reasons.
That's deadly. I guess my next question would be about the scorpion venom. How does that kill people and why doesn't it kill the mice?
Boy, howdy, I wish I could tell you, but there's a lot of really brilliant researchers that are looking into that relationship between the venom and these mice. What they found out so far is that for some reason, when they, it's not like they don't get stung. They get stung, but rather than having a pain response, they have a pain relief response. So they get stung by a scorpion and they're like, oh, that felt kind of nice. Do it again.
It's like a CBD tablet.
Yeah.
He'd be like honey badger. I heard honey badgers, they just don't care. They just, oh yeah, bite me, snake. I don't give a crap.
Yeah. That's pretty much what these mice are. And I wish more people knew about them because they are such a strange, amazing, gnarly mouse.
Well, that sounds like when dolphins were seen, they're like bashing into pufferfish to get high off the pufferfish. And they're like, puff, puff, pass. It sounds like the mice could be doing like, sting, sting, pass.
Maybe. I'm not sure how long the effects last, but I mean, can you imagine if we figure out the like why and how they're able to do that and then somehow be able to synthesize it and then use it for our own benefit too. So that there's some researchers looking into that, like what is it about their physiology that allows them to have this pain relief response? And now how can mankind capitalize on that? Because of course, you know, that's how humans think most of the time. How can we benefit?
One of the other pieces that I know you were working on was the hoary bat. And mm-hmm. I was checking out Erin's Twitter and she was having like this big celebratory moment about hoary bats. Can you tell me what was going on with that?
Yes. And Erin Bearwald is a co-supervisor of mine. She is now a professor at University of Northern British Columbia, so UNBC. So she's out in Prince George now. This, I guess it was last week, there was a large bracket competition, similar to March Madness, or if you are, maybe you've heard of March Mammal Madness. Yeah.
Not yet. I do now.
It's exactly like the same exact concepts as March Madness with basketball, except it's a massive competition between mammals. And then another competition was started for just bats because us bat folks, we like our bats. And it's very well warranted because bats, there are over 1,400 different species of bats. And so every once in a while, it's important to find out who's the best bat. And that got solved last week with the 2021 Bat World Cup. And it started with a pretty large bracket, and it included some North American species, including our hoary bat. And competition after competition, the hoary bat knocked them all out of the park. And the bat community was definitely rallying behind the hoary bat, and it got so much support, large part because of Dr. Erin Bearwald, who was posting nonstop to Twitter, just spamming as many different feeds as she possibly could to get people to vote for the hoary bat that we were all warmly referring to as the flying donut holes, flying donuts, because they kind of look like a donut, like their big ring of a mane around their head. And I like to call them sky lions because of that mane. And they were, the final competition was between the very, very, very charismatic flying fox. Everyone loves flying foxes. They look like flying puppies. They're adorable. And the hoary bat was our flying lion. So it was the flying lion versus the flying fox, and we did it. We won. It was won by, I think, just over 10 votes. So it was close. It was close, but we did it, and we all lost our minds.
That sounds like a marketing triumph.
Yes. Yes, it was.
bats kind of need that, I think. They had a little bit of a rough ride with COVID in 2020 and a lot of slander flying towards bats. Oh, bats were spreading the disease and this and that. And my understanding is we don't think it was connected to bats, but I still remember people saying, well, why are the bats, stupid bats and COVID? And maybe you could clear some of that up for me.
I would love to. And I'll speak to it as best as I can. I am not a disease ecologist. So this is based off my understanding of the ecology of disease, bats, and their very, very unique physiology. Do bats carry lots of different types of coronavirus? Yes, they do. Do they die from it? Do they get very sick? No, they don't, because their physiology is so unique. So they have amazing immune systems that can put up with all sorts of different types of these diseases that they can then harbor. So they can carry it, they can have it, but they're not going to get sick. And I think it's because of bats having this ability to really subdue their metabolic rate and really slow down their systems. They think it ramps up their immune systems and they can deal with a lot more. When it comes to COVID-19, there has been no direct link that it came from bats. Do researchers in general think that it likely came from some kind of wildlife source? Yes, but it hasn't been pinpointed yet. And it's not like if it did come from some kind of bat reservoir, some kind of bat source, it's not like the bat went flying to a person and infected them with a coronavirus. That's not how it works. It works because it was likely that someone was poaching wildlife or eating bush, or it got into a wet market and wasn't treated properly. And so it all boils down to taking advantage of wildlife by people. So it's not a wildlife problem. It's not a bat problem. It's a human behavior problem. And what's even crazier is that what COVID-19 has done was predicted. It was predicted that this would happen by researchers studying these types of wildlife that have very unique physiologies and can harbor these types of diseases. They said, hey, we've got some stuff going on over here. We should probably invest more research funding so that we can really figure this out before, you know, there's a massive pandemic and lots of people get sick. Well, I think you know how the funding situation went.
Right. Well, I seem to recall the previous administration in the United States was cutting funding and pulling people out and basically undermining the best efforts of scientists to get this research going.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely a hair pulling situation. I'm originally from the States, so yes, it was one of those things when I was seeing the previous administration just cut funding to the sciences left and right. It was heart-wrenching. It was absolutely heart-wrenching, which was, this is not on my TikTok, but one of the things that I did during the first 2 years of the Trump administration was actually help organize my local March for Science demonstrations. It was all biology graduate students and researchers that put together these massive demonstrations to promote funding in the sciences and evidence-based policy decisions. That was in Flagstaff where we did that, but it was a global movement. And I think I would go as far to say it was the precursor demonstrations to the climate marchers, climate marches led by Greta Thunberg was probably really promoted by the March for Sciences all across the globe.
This, my next thought here, it's just going to be pandering to you basically, but one of the things I think that needs to happen going forward is this concentrated effort by scientists to engage in the act of public education and communication. And I think that's why I'm drawn to people like you and Hank Green and Emily Calandrelli, because they're producing content that gets people excited and helps them understand why this stuff's important and makes it less like magic and more understandable. Because for example, like a cell phone, right? You can access the total sum of human knowledge with a cell phone, but you don't have to understand how it works. You don't have to understand how software works or binary code or computer language. You could just mash buttons like a chimp and it will work for you. I mean, you don't even have to push buttons anymore. You could just talk at it and it can generally figure out what you're the meat in your head is trying to get across. Like, it's functionally magic for a lot of people. And I think if we can demystify, but also electrify science, we can make life better for everybody and prevent things like pandemics.
Yeah. Yeah. Using, I have always really liked talking about cool wildlife, because it's, to me personally, when I see something as simple as a bee on a flower, I can sit down and I can watch that bee on a flower for probably 20 or 30 minutes and just be amazed, be absolutely amazed looking at what it's doing and how it's getting the pollen on it and what it's getting out of it with the nectar, and just be in awe of, because I also have that knowledge now that bee is going to go to another flower, and then that flower is going to get pollinated, and that bee is going to get full, go back to its hive, tell everybody else where it's all the good nectar is, and then take care of the hive. And it's such a beautiful, intricate process that I think for a really long time, people in general have been so far separated from our natural world, because we're all moving closer into cities. A lot of us are being born in cities, and we just don't get the exposure of our natural world. And so when I see something as mundane as a bee on a flower, it's not just that that's what I see. It's also being able to connect the dots and to realize that, oh, the honey that I'm getting off the shelf or that I'm getting from the farmer's market is directly related to this natural process that without, we wouldn't have sweet, sweet honey. And you can extrapolate that to all sorts of different things. I mean, there's so many different applications to that one little anecdote, that little example. And I just love sharing that because it amazes me, it astounds me. And if I can get other people as excited about it as I am, maybe we can start having a positive push towards respecting our wildlife and our natural world a little bit more.
Right. It's, what does it say for us when we have to say, this is good for your economy to conserve these species?
Exactly. Exactly. No species exists in a vacuum, mankind included.
Right. We know bats. I remember talking with Aaron. They're like worth billions and billions of dollars to the agricultural industry, which obviously Saskatchewan, massive agricultural piece in our economy. It's an engine that drives what's going on in our lives. It's why we exist here primarily. Mm-hmm. And it's like bats are free pest control. And even though they might be reservoirs for disease and our puny human immune systems can't handle it, they're doing all these other great things, like making it so we don't have to spray pesticides on food, which then we don't have to consume and possibly get sick by. And it doesn't kill other insects and pollinators with like neonicotinoids. And
yeah, absolutely.
I'm just rambling here, but perhaps you have a separate insight to offer that my brain cannot. What are you learning about these connections?
Well, I mean, you already said one of the big ones, which is the ag industry. It really does save. Let me back up for a second. Sorry. Yes, bats save the agricultural industry in a single region billions of dollars. That was it. It was supported by a paper that came, I can't remember what time frame it came out in, but it was just for one region where they wanted to know how much one species of bat saves the agricultural industry. And it was billions and billions of dollars. So if you extrapolate that out to all of the agriculture all across the world, how much are we benefiting from having bats in our backyards? It's incalculable. It's absolutely incalculable. But not just that, there's the agricultural industry in the sense of they are consuming insects, beetles, moths, etc. They're all going to lay larvae, and larvae are going to lay eggs on your plants, which are going to, or sorry, the adults will lay eggs on your plants, which will go into larvae, which will eat up all your leaves. Bad news, bad news. But then there's also crops that are pollinated by bats. Mangoes are pollinated by bats. Figs pollinated by bats. And then there's all of the seed dispersal as well. So they're dispersing these seeds, growing new trees because their poop is excellent fertilizer. Just the cream of the crop, pun intended, of fertilizers. And then there are certain products that literally wouldn't exist because the plants wouldn't be able to survive. Things like tequila. So I don't know if you've ever heard, I mean, we're talking about supporting some alcoholic beverages here. Another one, if people are tequila fans, thank your bats. Bats are a primary pollinator of the agave plant, which is a type of century plant. And agave are direct, they are, I'm sorry, bats or the tequila bats are one of the primary pollinators of the agave plant. And there was a lot of really amazing research and conservation work done in Mexico by some brilliant researchers. One in particular, his name's Dr. Rodrigo Medellin. He's known as the Batman of Mexico, brilliant person, unbelievably kind, and always is good for carrying around a small flask of either tequila or mezcal with him, without fail. And he worked tirelessly to not get a species listed as endangered, but getting a species delisted as endangered, which was the one of the long-nosed bats found in Mexico that is a pollinator of the agave plant. And he was able to get certain areas protected, and now the species rebounded and was able to be taken off the endangered species list, which is just, you don't hear about that enough. When it comes to like conservation, as scientists, we don't want to have species listed as endangered. That's not our goal. But for the hoary bat example, we are trying to get it listed. In fact, Dr. Bearwald and I are both a part of the team helping write the documents to get them listed as endangered in Canada, which is going to be a huge step for their conservation, but because they need it.
Why is that important to Saskatchewan?
I'm going to think on this question. So maybe this is one of those parts where you can like edit it and condense it down.
Well, you think about it while I talk a little bit about the beer I am drinking.
Sure.
I always like to do little transitions like that.
Yeah.
I'm kind of cheating because I also sent you the Majestic Milkshake Lychee, and I can't have lactose. So that one's for you, and I hope you love it. I picked Nokomis because I knew we'd be mentioning Aaron Bearwald, and I have their Berliner Weisse. It's this really excellent wheat beer, and it's kind of like a champagne with a sour character, super bubbly. You just need to get it in you. Like, it's so good. And I've been sipping it while you've been talking and just been like savoring it. And I, before the podcast, I said to my wife, I know you're not a beer drinker. I know you're a wine drinker, but this is the wine of beers. And all the beer geeks are freaking out about this on the forums. Mark, my boss at Rebellion, he's a BJCP guy. He's a certified judge and a Cicerone. He's like, this is excellent. And Saskatchewan deserves to be putting out good beer like this.
I would agree completely. And I've only been like more and more impressed with the beer coming out of all of these local breweries across Saskatchewan, because I'm definitely a beer person for sure. And they've only been getting better and better, which is just great to see in more and more microbrews too, which is really exciting. The small brewing community seems to be growing very quickly in Sask, which is really cool to see.
I really hope you get to try some of that Berliner Weiss. It's at Sobeys, where I saw it, but I think Co-op might have it too. But because Nokomis has a smaller footprint, they're not like everywhere yet.
They're not an Indian head, and it kills me. I've been working on my local stores for 2 years to get them to carry Nokomis. So maybe this podcast will help.
So I guess now that I've given you the chance to kind of drink some beer and think about the hoary bat question, why does listing it as an endangered species matter to Saskatchewan?
So first, let me say that hoary bats are highly migratory. They are highly migratory. They're one of North America's larger bats, and they're not going to be, you know, a meter across. They're not that big. They're, you know, I know you can't see that, but they're probably
two baseballs.
Yeah, they're maybe two softballs. They're pretty good. They're pretty good size. A larger bat for North America. So being a migratory species, they are moving vast, vast distances. They can travel over 1,000 kilometers one way. They can come from Mexico all the way to southern Saskatchewan and even further north into the boreal forest. And when you have a species that is that migratory, they're not just benefiting one place at one time of year. They're going to be benefiting, whether it's through insect consumption, and they're going to be chowing down on beetles. So think of some of like the pest type of beetles. They're going to be eating those up. Moths, they're going to be eating all those up, which can easily be agricultural pests. And they're going to be doing that along the entire way that they are migrating, because they can forage. They're called aerial hawkers. That is their foraging style. So they can forage on the wing. And that entire time, they're also depositing all sorts of nutrients because of their poop. And I'm not kidding, that poop is very, very rich. It's good stuff. And so you've got nutrients being deposited across the landscape, pests being removed from the landscape. And when it comes to kind of things that might hit harder to home, it's, I hate to say it, but so historically speaking, there has not been a lot of research done on some of these species, and the hoary bat is included. And one thing we do know is that their population numbers all across North America are drastically declining. They are the number one bat that experience mortality and fatality at wind energy facilities. And because of that, those populations are going down. And so we don't know everything that they're doing for us. So we don't know what the domino effect is going to be if that species were to be removed from the landscape. So I would rather not find out the hard way personally, because I think we've all been finding out the hard way over the past year and a half when there's not enough research done quickly enough.
Fucking right.
Yeah. Like,
damn it.
Con!
That makes complete sense to me.
Yeah. <You know? laughs> I hope it makes sense to other people. And luckily, or maybe not luckily, thankfully, I feel like bats are finally starting to get the respect that they deserve and the excitement that they deserve and the love. And so I'm really, really hopeful for the future of bats. I feel like people are really starting to pay attention to them. While in some cases a bad way, because they do still get a bad rap with diseases, unwarranted, I'll say it again for those in the back, unwarranted, but also a lot of really good attention. And so I'm really hopeful. I'm really hopeful for research. I'm really hopeful for more science communication to come out about them. I'm going to be doing my due diligence to try and get the good news out about these wonderful bats. And yeah, we'll see what happens for them moving forward. So there's all sorts of benefits, and we don't know what they all are yet. And I look forward to finding out.
Well, I'm super jazzed for when we get our second round of vaccines. And you can just tap me on the shoulder, pop by the tap room. Let's talk about bats. Let's drink beer. Let's just be nerds. And I'm ready for summer and to be out of the house, you know?
Me too. I'm so excited. I have officially my start date for field work to be studying this amazing bat species. June 9th, I get to go back because it's been over a year. Like you said that just a bit ago, that bats kind of started getting the short end of the stick when COVID started really taking off. And there was practically a whole year where all bat researchers weren't able to do work. And can you imagine when there's the possibility that potentially the root cause of why we all had to shut down our lives, and now you're not going to let us go and try and figure it out? So we're all of these bat researchers are starting to get back out and do their work. We're all so excited, myself included. I cannot wait.
Do you have to wear like special PPE extra now because of COVID?
Yes, yeah. We will still have to. We are going to have to wear some extra PPE. I'm kind of a mess when I'm out in the field, and I tend to like wear the same shirt for 4 or 5 days in a row. I can't do that anymore. And then we also have to wear good face masks that will not allow droplets to come out of our mouths, because one of the things that they are concerned about, which has not been supported, is that our North American bats don't harbor these same coronaviruses. Is there the potential that we can give it to the bats? So there's been some research going on over the last year or so to see if people can transmit it to bats. And it's not looking like it's going to be anything for us to worry about, but it's better to be safe than sorry. So we are going to be wearing these masks to prevent us from potentially spreading them to bats. We always have to wear gloves anyway, and we'll be wiping down and sanitizing everything every single night.
I'm super jazzed. I can't wait to see some of the results of your work. I know you mentioned wind power and how the bats are being taken out by wind power, but I don't think it's a strong enough argument to against wind. I remember talking with Aaron about wind corridors, and I've seen the vertical vibrating stacks as opposed to the wing turbines. And I'm like, is that the future? Is those vibrating stacks? Is that where Saskatchewan needs to go to protect the bats?
You know, I wish I could give you a definite answer on that. You know, they at this time that I don't think that the taller cylindrical ones are producing enough energy compared to these really big turbines with the large blades that you see all across the landscape now, and more and more are going up. And the bats and wind issue is definitely one that is near and dear to my heart. And Dr. Berwald has been working. She has been kind of spearheading that push for years. She was really the first one to start sounding off the alarms. And I'm so happy to be working with her to try and move conservation efforts forward, because wind and renewable energy has to happen. And it is going to happen, and it's going to continue to happen. And I would never be against it. Renewable energy is an ideal solution to non-renewable resources, but it doesn't have to be at the expense of wildlife. There's things that industry can do to help lessen the impact that they have on species. Will there be some kind of negligible profits effect? Possibly. But are we going to save a species as a result? Possibly. So is it worth it to take those measures to help protect them? Absolutely. And so it's just going to take a lot of work of researchers and conservationists working hand in hand with industry and working hand in hand with government so that we can find the best solution to protect our species and to help increase the amount of wind energy and wind energy potential all across North America.
I love that answer.
Oh, cool.
The next thought that pokes into my brain is, energy might, you mentioned that they might have to sacrifice a little bit in terms of efficiencies or something like that. But I'm like, back to your point about agriculture and the billions and billions of dollars there. I'm like, if it's a cost benefit analysis, I think I'd want also a robust agriculture industry because humans need food to live.
Yeah. Yeah.
And make and, beer.
And exactly. In fact, fun fact, I have two hop plants now growing outside of my house. So
they're going to take over your backyard.
I know they will. I'm pretty excited about it though. I'm ready for it. I knew it was going to happen and I want it to happen because I love hops. They're beautiful and they're fragrant and they're nice. It's the native species too. So,
oh yeah. Which ones did you get?
Oh gosh. My husband would know. He is a plant fanatic and he was the one that sourced them. So I would have to go back and ask him.
I know that we're planning on doing some brewing with native species to Saskatchewan, but it's really, really tough to get a really nice quality beer with some of the hops just because of the way the industry has gone. But now we're catching up with guys like JGL Shepherd Farms near Moosomin. What's I think's also really exciting about hops is they're like a natural antibacterial, anti-pest kind of plant. So if you're trying to get rid of pests, but you don't want to spray or disrupt the rest of your garden, hops can kind of serve to protect your garden.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And we're doing my husband's really been putting in the legwork for our yard here, but we have worked very hard to convert our yard into all local native plants to promote native insects or in just increasing the insect diversity and abundance of everything. And just last week, we got our certification from the Canadian Wildlife Society, Canadian Wildlife Federation, one of the something like that, for being a wildlife habitat friendly yard, which is exciting. And I can attest that having been working on this over the past two and a half years, we have seen the amount of insect diversity go through the roof, and like the good ones too. We have more dragonflies, which are going to be eating all of your pest insects. We've got brown bats living in our house, which I'm not mad about. we like keeping them around. And this was the first year that we had, I think, five or six new species of birds come to our yard this year. So I'm giving credit because of the native plants that we've been putting in.
I love that you brought that up because I was literally just yesterday talking about that with one of my friends. And I was like, this Kentucky blue fescue is just a pain in the ass and it's so much water and maintenance. I'm like, why can't we go to native grass species?
I mean, you can. That's the thing. You can. Yeah. It takes time. It takes time. One of the reasons why people love those wonderful soft green lawns is because they sprout so quickly and then you have beautiful grass. So if you're willing to put in and wait and have patience, you can have that beautiful yard and have it be native. So you can have the best of both worlds if you have a little bit of patience.
I feel like I've learned so much from you, and it's not just from your TikToks, but even this conversation today. If people want to follow you online, where should they go?
So I am very active on Instagram, TikTok, and I'm getting better at Twitter. So you can find me on all of those using my handle, iPatchBiologist. This is a podcast, so you can't really see my face, but I am an iPatched biologist. So I figured it's the first thing people see when they see a picture of me or meet me in person. So I decided to go ahead and just capitalize on it. And I switched all of my social media names to iPatch Biologist.
I feel like it's this wonderful essential part of your brand, kind of like Bill Nye's bow tie.
Yeah.
It like sets you apart and you just own it. Like Mark will wear a fanny pack and have a mullet and everybody's like, that's Mark. And when they see Dana, they're just like, that's Dana, you know? And I love it.
That's right. And it's actually another one of the things that I like to be pretty vocal about on my TikTok, because not only am I communicating science, but I'm also a scientist with a very visible disability. And I don't want to shy away from that, because it does affect everyday life. And so I wear it with pride. I own it. I have an assortment of eye patches now. I'm not much of a jewelry person, but oh man, when I realized I was going to be wearing eye patches for the rest of my life, the collection started. So I can transition from like humble scientist with kind of like a drab eye patch to instant villain very quickly.
Oh, that's great. I want to leave a little bit of a surprise for people when they find you on TikTok, so I won't pry too much into getting you to tell that story. So I guess I just want to thank you for your time today.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Rebels, thanks for listening today. If you have any questions or comments about this episode, be sure to join us on our brand new Facebook group page, The Rebellion Brewing Podcast. I'm going to include links to all of Dana's social media so you can find her and check out her content online. I'm also proud to let you know that we're members of the Saskatchewan Podcast Network. It's a one-stop shop for tons of locally produced shows from across our province. You can find them at saskpodcastnetwork.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Untappd so you don't miss out on the latest in Sask craft beer news. Thank you for joining the Rebellion.